Hello, hello, hello. How are you? I hope you're well, everybody. You. Don't ask why, but that song is really stuck in my head. But I think it's because I'm in an excited mood, because normally I think about that song when I'm excited. And I'm excited because today you're going to be listening to a chat I had with a current co-worker of mine. I'm so excited. Last week I said I was hopefully going to be having my first guest since revamping the podcast. And I'm pleased to confirm that indeed myself and the wonderful Daniel Jacob, aka Vinegar Strokes, were able to sit down and have a lovely old chat in Liverpool at the gorgeous Vessel Studios. Thank you so much, guys, for hosting us for that hour and a bit. And yeah, we sat down, we had a chat, we were talking all about touring and how our different experiences are of that, and also what's led Daniel up to the present moment in terms of his career as a drag artist, as an improv comedian, as an actor. And I'm just gassed for you to listen to it, because apart from anything else, it's just nonsensical, some of it, but there's a lot of really wonderful gems in there too. In case you don't know who Daniel is, he's currently playing Lady Bracknell in The Importance of Being Earnest as my mother. I'm playing Gwendolyn Fairfax and he's playing Lady Bracknell, and he is sensational, might I add. But I'll give you a little more flavour of who Daniel is as well. So Daniel Jacob, pronouns he, him, is an actor and cabaret performer, graduated from the Liverpool Institute for the Performing Arts. That's LIPA, affectionately known. Some of Daniel's credits include The Importance of Being Earnest, which we're doing currently, Death Drop, The Mystery of Desire, Eurobeat, Everybody's Talking About Jamie, Testosterone Rent Party, Charming Dick, The Macbeths, Angelina Ballerina the Musical, Aladdin, and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. Daniel has also gained international recognition as his drag queen alter ego Vinegar Strokes. Vinegar Strokes became a household name when she strutted her heels into the workroom of the first season of RuPaul's Drag Race UK. After the national and international success of RuPaul's Drag Race UK, Vinegar Strokes has toured and performed across the UK, Ireland, Europe, and America, starred in an opera in Copenhagen for World Pride, appeared on numerous podcasts and radio shows, including Radio 1 and Gaydio, presented numerous Drag Race associated web series, and also gained several TV credits, including EastEnders, Dinner with My Ex, and Drag Karaoke Club. Vinegar is also the lead singer of music act Vinegar Strokes and the Morning Afters, who I have actually seen live, and they are phenomenal. They are a six-piece funk, synth, and pop band performing live shows across the UK. Vinegar Strokes and the Morning Afters music can be found on Spotify and iTunes, should you wish to go and have a listen, which I would highly recommend. But without further ado, no need to set the scene. Vessel Studios is where we were at Wednesday morning after a quite wild night out, which you are about to hear all about. I hope you really enjoy the chat, and I'll actually be on a flight to LA when this drops, and Daniel will be on a flight to New York. So we're both US bound, but completely opposite ends of the continent. But I hope you enjoy the episode. We had a lot of fun recording it, and yeah, let me know what you think. This is In the Room with Adele James, and here is the unfiltered version of Daniel Jacob, aka Vinegar Strokes' story. Okay, all right. Hi, yes. Daniel.
Hi, Adele James.
Hi, Daniel Jacob.
Two J's in a room, hungover.
So hungover. So hungover.
No, this is your fault, right?
It's absolutely my fault, and I'm happy to take accountability for that. I had a really good evening. So what happened was, obviously we're now in Liverpool. We had our Liverpool press last night, and when they offer Adele free drinks at the bar, Adele takes the free drinks and runs with them.
Well, I think you're not human if you're not taking a free drink. My mum always said, say yes to everything unless it gives you a rash.
Oh, my God.
And, you know.
That's such good advice. Thanks, Mama Jacob.
I was like, yeah, absolutely. So when there's a free gin and tonic on the go, you'll go have it. Do you know what I mean?
It's only right, isn't it? But the thing that wasn't necessary was the pub after and then the club after when we knew we had a podcast recording at 11 o'clock in the morning the next day. So, you know.
But we're here.
Here we are.
We've got a nice cup of coffee on the go.
We've got a delicious cup of Nootropics coffee. How are you enjoying yours?
This is my first ever Nootropics, and I'm having a nice time.
Are you?
I am. It's really nice. What one did you give me? Was it the orange one?
So I gave you Mojo, which is
the green one.
And that one is designed for physical endurance, strength and vitality. You don't need physical endurance right now, but strength and vitality, I think most definitely.
I'm going to disagree with you. I think you need physical endurance just to sit upright. I could be lying down right now. So this coffee is doing me
That's the truth. So thank you, London Nootropics, for your service.
Thank you, London Nootropics.
I'm glad you like it, though. It really is my favourite coffee.
It's smooth. It feels robust. It's almost a bit creamy with this milk you popped in.
Oat milk, yeah.
A bit of sugar. I feel great.
I'm so happy for you.
No, I'm really having a nice time. London Nootropics.
London Nootropics, that's the one.
I'm going to get it tattooed on me, I think.
Fantastic. Across your forehead, obviously.
Across my forehead.
Naturally. Where else?
But backwards, so in the mirror, it's actually right way around. Yeah, do you know what I mean? Smart thinking.
Yeah. All right, Daniel. So I always start the podcast by talking about the present moment, being the moment I'm in right now, but also, I suppose, the moments between the last time I recorded, so normally within a week, that have led up to this present moment. Mm. How's the present moment going for you, aside from the hangover?
apart from the hangover, which is very present, the headache is very here and there. I feel like I'm back in my hometown. I'm not from Liverpool originally, but I did train here at LIPA, Liverpool Institute of Performing Arts. So I feel like I'm kind of back where I did my kind of growing up in my little early 20s. So every time I come back to Liverpool, I always feel very at home.
Yeah.
So the present moment is good. I mean, I've got some lovely digs, been eating some nice food. And yeah, I just feel very at home, which I think it encompasses a lot of nice emotions, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. And I think there's something kind of full circle about it as well, isn't there?
Oh, 100%. Because I graduated 2009. I have performed in Liverpool twice before, once or twice on other shows, but the particular theatre that we're in, it's always been like one of my favourite spaces in Liverpool. So we're at the Liverpool Playhouse, and this one and the Everyman were always like my two favourite spaces in the city. Just because it just felt like, you know, they had shows that came here which were not just your bog standard, you know, touring musicals, something like that. Nothing wrong with that. We love it. But something a bit more creative, a bit more arty. So, yeah, it's kind of full circle for me to kind of be like, I'm back in the place that I trained, back where it all kind of started.
Mm.
And I'm now finally at a space that I'm like, this is the space I wanted to be performing at some point. So, yeah. Yeah, it's a nice tick off the bucket list.
Absolutely. Know? I'm so happy for you.
Well, this is the thing. I think a lot of times people look at actors and go, you know, there's either just West End, or there's Hollywood, or there's Broadway, or there's EastEnders, and that's it. and it's like, actually, I think a lot of people don't realise that a lot of actors, especially for me, I don't know about you, but there are little spaces, little places that you kind of have frequented over your life, whether it's like your youth or whatever, and you go, I would love to perform here or be in this space for some reason at some point. And that could be literally a black box room in Edinburgh Fringe. But there's something that you connect with it, makes you go, I want to be here, just experience this space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the kind of beauty of being just a jobbing actor, in that actually these opportunities to go to these little spaces that kind of you kind of connect with in whatever way it is. It's kind of possible. So
absolutely. And I think that kind of speaks to something that I was doing a workshop with some acting students last weekend, and I was talking to them about the fact that being a working actor kind of means more than just being like the lead in a Hollywood blockbuster. Like, that's not the only way to be a working actor or a successful actor. Even like, there are loads of people, particularly in theatre, who are working consistently. They work more than I work. My work might have slightly higher profile in some respects, but they work consistently. They make a living from what they do. And they're constantly going from project to project to project in a variety of kind of, I suppose, sizes of roles. And I think there's, because of the public nature of parts of the industry, there's this kind of like unnecessary pressure that people feel to be doing certain types of work consistently. But actually, like, there are so many spaces that I've been to that I would love to have a go at working at, because there are different challenges that come with different spaces.
Yeah.
I love this theatre because it's so traditional.
Yes.
And a lot of the theatres that we've worked at, even on this tour, have been quite modern, I would say.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to just go around places. Like the last time I toured, we went to places like Darlington. I didn't even know where Darlington was, let alone that it had like a 2,000 seat theatre. Like it's huge. Mm. But like, I think that's such a joy to go and just do something that's a little bit like different.
I think it's like, for someone who's like a theatre nerd like I am, I really enjoy the kind of history behind certain buildings as well.
Mm.
I mean, the space we're in has, you know, a massive history to it. So I'm just kind of like learning, you know, what's going on. Are there ghosts? Are there this? Like, do you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff would just make it really exciting to be in these buildings. And don't get me wrong, you know, I think it's exciting when you get the opportunity to do the big places like your West End or your Broadway or...
Of course.
Or whatever. It's amazing. But I think there's something quite beautiful just appreciating these tiny little spaces that are kind of in the sticks or somewhere where it's got a very kind of a local community who just support the space. And it's just something really beautiful. I think even us going to with the two pillars, was it Ipswich?
With the two pillars.
The two pillars that like where the stage was like, we've got pillars everywhere.
Oh yeah, that was Ipswich, the new Rosie Theatre.
It was a challenge, but the theatre was gorgeous.
Love that theatre.
And you know, it just kind of makes you go, okay, cool. So the space has changed our show slightly, and it's changed the kind of parameters of the show and how it functions in that space. But it's still the same show, and that kind of allows you to kind of go, it's the same show, but I'm now working with these things, these corners, these things that I'm not used to, but that's going to add to the flow. So yeah, I just think I'm very grateful that I'm able to do certain jobs and certain shows, but I am able to experience your big massive West Endy spaces, and then also, you know, the tiny spaces where it's kind of like you get five people in the audience and it's just you guys having a good old time. Because it's end of the day, you know, you can tell stories anywhere, and that's what we're doing, is just tell a good old story. So
yeah, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. And I think the challenge of touring is all at once so kind of exciting and I think quite humbling, but it's also really grueling. I was talking last week about how tired I am. But it's like a happy tired, because I'd rather be tired doing what I love than tired because I'm miserable because I'm, you know, sitting around and beating myself up about that.
Yeah.
But how are you kind of finding the process of touring? Because you strike me, certainly out of everybody in our cast, but possibly out of everyone I've ever worked with, as someone who's on the move a lot anyway, because you gig with your band as well, don't you? I know you're going on a cruise soon. You seem like someone who's on the move quite a lot for work as well as for pleasure. So I wonder how you're finding, maybe you're finding this a bit easier than I am. I don't know, because you've got such a massive role as well. So there's that.
Yeah, I mean, my first ever job, my professional job, was a 9-month tour.
Oh, gosh.
Joseph and the Amazing Technical Dreamcoat, UK tour, 12 shows a week.
Wow. Who did you play?
The Black Brother.
Of course.
Who sung the Calypso and the Gospel ad-libs typecast. And I was the only black guy in the cast. So
I was the only black person on my last tour. Right? I was the only brown person in the entire company.
POC. After I did that job, because we did like, so our travel day was, I think it was a Sunday. Mm. We're going to every stick place in the country. Like, we're giving it Shrewsbury, we're giving it Stoke-on-Trent, all these little holes in the walls that you'll go, why would I even get off the train at this stop? Do you know what I mean? No offence if you live in these places, it's gorgeous. But what I'm saying is, like, from someone from London, I'm not going to get off at Doncaster or the stop before that. I'm going straight through it. But no, like, we got off the train at all these random places. So travel day was a Sunday. Saturday, so we've got two shows on a Saturday for this show. We would literally bow. Half an hour later was the half for the next show.
No.
I'm not even kidding. So it was like, three shows Saturday, and it was, and with that show, you're on stage all the time. It's not like, you know, I feel really like I've got luxury here because I've got two big scenes of the show, and I'm kind of done. Do you know what I mean? I can sit and chill out. Mm. But you're on stage from the start. I mean, you go off stage once for one song, and you're doing quick changes and stuff. So you're on stage the whole time. So imagine doing that three times every Saturday, and then we had matinees as well, like during the week. So it wasn't like we were kind of giving it great, you know, one show a day, whatever. No, it was like literally your box standards, and you've got the three shows Saturday. So when I finished that, after 9 months as well,
wow!
I finished that and I went, anything I do after this job will be a piece of urine piss. I don't know if I can say piss or not, piece of piss.
The thing I love about that is that you said urine first.
Because I tried to be like PC for the kids at home.
For the kids.
If you listen to this and you're under 18, don't swear.
For kids, please.
But a piece of piss. Like, I was like, it's going to be easy.
Yeah.
And that's been my mindset since, because I think when you start off doing a job which is that grueling, I mean, that's my first tour. And I think when you're not used to touring anyway, my God, it takes so much out of you. Like, if you have toured a few times, like, you're still knackered after touring. Like, I'm tired. But I think because I've done that, and I've done a few more tours after that, and you said, like, I do gig a lot, so I travel a lot for my own gigs or my drag stuff and whatnot. So I'm kind of used to going, like, suitcase, train, let's go, you know, get ready, do a show, go back somewhere else. So I'm quite used to it. I do quite enjoy it as well.
Mm-hmm.
I like traveling. I like seeing places. There's always a nice treat wherever you go, whether it's food or... gentlemanly persuasions for the kids. That
kids, stop listening from now. Stop listening from now.
Parents, I'm sorry. Stay in school. So I enjoy touring, and I feel like I've kind of cracked the code on how to tour like a boss. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, you got your little treats. I've got a box of, like, pharmacy goods. I call, here's the pharmacy. It's got my Lemsips, my Vocazones, my Brockers, you know, Jakemans. I've got everything in there that I need to feel well on a tour. Because usually on tours, you know, there's no understudies. So if you go down, the show's down.
The show's down.
Yeah. And we're not paid to go down. Do you know what I mean?
Nope.
So, you know, for me, it's like having the pharmacy box, having my little box of, like, sugars and stirrers and cutleries that I've stolen from Pret A Manger and stuff, just to whack salt and pepper, that kind of stuff. Just bits where you kind of go, oh, I've cracked the code on how to tour and how to be comfortable on tour. And I think when you're going to learn that way of life of being a jobbing actor, it's a pursuit of being successful. Not just on the show, but also just successful kind of where you are mentally, physically, you know, and just checking in with yourself. How's your health that week or that day? How are you feeling mentally? Have you called your mum? Have you called your dad? Have you called your best mate? Have you watched a movie? Have you gone to the cinema that week? Or have you read a book? Just it's little things like that I think people forget to do, because even though you're on tour working, you're still trying to create that kind of home for the week, wherever you are. Do you know what I mean? That's a really important thing that I've learned, because I know when I didn't do that, I was lethargic, I was grumpy, I hated doing the show, I didn't want to do the show, I had no energy for it, I had no energy to even just be happy.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to remember, like, we're doing something that we love to do, that we train to do, and we're very lucky, because there was someone here on your left, someone on your right, who was up for the same role, but they picked you for a reason. So if you're going on tour and being grumpy and miserable and not feeling good in the moment, for me, that kind of affects the work and affects you from, like, a well-being point of view. So,
absolutely. Yeah, I think that's really sage advice. And I can feel it myself. Like, when you're saying, like, oh, have you called your mum? I'm like, I haven't spoken to my mum nearly enough.
Call your mum. I got drunk last night, as we all did. And I literally said, 1 minute... And I just called mum and said, love you. She was like, you? I was like, you, love. All right, cheers, bye, love you too. And that was that.
It's important. It really is important. And I think I'm quite, I can be quite guilty of getting sucked into the bubble. And that happens when I'm on jobs in one place as well. So it's not even necessarily a tour. Actually, I've very rarely worked in London, which is strange, in the 10 or so years that I've been working. But... even when I've been in one place, like Casualty, they shoot in Cardiff, or the job that I did in Morocco, you're in one place for ages. And it's still not, it's still just not been possible for me to connect back with, yeah. with home. I feel like I've gotten into this place where I'm like, I'm on a job now. Everybody leave me alone.
Yeah, you know.
Which can be helpful.
Yeah.
But actually, it doesn't work for me. And so it's interesting that you say that because I've been thinking about it and I feel like I needed to hear that.
But this is the thing. You got to also remember that I'm sure your mum, friends, whatever, they understand
Definitely.
That you are busy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? My mum always says, oh, don't worry about calling me. You know, I know you're busy. Cause I'm like, no, but I'm really calling you for myself.
Yes.
It's for myself in front of you. I'm calling you because I have to call you. And I still don't think I call my mum as much as I should do or speak to my brother as much as I should do. But I know that they understand that I'm busy. And mm-hmm. even though, obviously, you know, the tour schedule is essentially you're asleep all afternoon and you go in for the show at night, essentially.
Basically.
But or you're, but again, in that kind of afternoon time, I like to think of it as like a self-repair kind of thing. Mm. The self-repair of going, I need to sleep.
Yeah.
I need to zone out for a second. You might be early on, I need to actually learn this scene because I the lines aren't even there yet. So it's like a self-repair thing that I think happens in that kind of afternoon before you go into work. And sometimes you need to just be with yourself.
Mm.
And that's okay. Mm. And I think it's, you know, we're always quite hard on ourselves because you want to kind of be everywhere at once and you want to try and be active in not just your own life, but also, you know, other people's, so your best friend, family, whatever. And it's not possible all the time, you know.
Yeah.
And I think it's a kind of mindset of going, I know that they know that I'm busy
mm-hmm.
and they're okay with that. And they're actually, and they're not even sitting by the phone waiting for me to call. Do you yeah. know what I mean? Because I'm always sat there going, my mum is sat by the phone waiting for
right.
me to call them.
Like they don't have a life.
But she's not. She's having a nice time at home. She's having a nice time. So, yeah. Call your mum.
I'm gonna call her right after this.
Call her after this, and you know, and I bet you in money you'll come on the phone and go, I feel great. Like you just feel a little, you know, a little kind of, I don't know, a zest of good stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
what
no, I think you know what it is. It's like grounding. Like
yes,
I here I can be whoever I want to be,
mm-hmm.
and I say that quite loosely. But
it's true. But it's true. Let me just go on that because actually. If you're someone who is a recognisable face of TV, stage, mm. whatever, and you get people who go, oh, my God, hi, you're Del James. Or I get, oh, my God, are you feeling a stroke? So, you know, I can sit there and be like, yes, I am. And, yeah. you know, you're going to love me. Or all this stuff. Do you know what I mean? if I was that way inclined, I would be like, I would suck all that up and be like, yes, it's me. They know who I am. And, you know, you could feel like that is you for the day. But actually, you need grounding mm. because the reason why you're here isn't to be, you know, Adele James or Vinegar Strokes or whatever, Danger, whatever, to get recognised in public where you're having a coffee with your sunglasses, even though it's camp and fun. But you need that grounding to go, I need to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. I need to then get back into playing this role for this job that I've been cast in.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can be whoever you want on tour,
mm.
but I think it's important to, as you said, to go and ground yourself.
Yeah,
whatever
absolutely.
Way that is. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when there's like, as well, when there's like a little bit of drama going on.
Woo!
And it's like, you know what? Sometimes I need to be checked because you don't know me now, but you don't know me.
No, exactly.
Whereas like, if I call one of my girls and I'm like, listen, this is what's happened. Am I being out of order? Can you just tell me? Because you know what I can
Am
be
I
like.
The that's the...
Yeah, can you just tell me if I'm a bit fucked here?
Yeah, yeah.
And they just will, you know, and sometimes I just need to have a laugh about that or just be checked so I can take accountability for that or so I can move past something or, yeah, it's just, and also like, I don't want to go 3 months without knowing what's going on in other people's lives.
Yeah.
Like, I miss my friends. I miss my family. Mm-hmm. The girl that's not calling anybody. But I'm like, I miss you. I won't talk to you, though.
I talked to you in 4 months and I'm back. Yeah.
Oh, my love, before we go on, I just wanted to ask very quickly if you might be able to hit the like button, the subscribe button, the follow button, the rate button, whatever the platform allows for. 5 stars would be so awesome and a cheeky review, but whatever you think is fair is great too. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Sorry to kill the vibe.
Anyway, there's a lot in there. I do think it's really important to just not get sucked into the bubble too much. And I'm really grateful to you, actually, for that reminder on this fine Wednesday morning.
No, but it's true. You know, and again, you only really... I've only really known this because I've been through touring and doing jobs where I haven't called people for months. Mm. I'm like, oh, my God. You bump into them in the street when you're back off tour. You're like unemployed, fun employed. And you're giving it, oh, hi, I'm now doing a bar job. And they go, oh, how you been? I'm like, I've been away for like 8 months. But I don't know anything that you've been doing. And they know what you've been doing because you've been posting, yep. You've been giving, I'm having a great time.
Yeah, look at me in all these places.
taking 20 selfies to find the one with a good filter. Do you know what I mean? People know what you're doing and they can see you're having a great time from the smoke and mirrors of social media. But yeah. It's an interesting lifestyle to get your head around. And I think you have to do it a few times before you've cracked the code on what how it works for you. And the way that I do touring is going to be different to the way you do touring.
For sure.
And whoever else. I mean, it's always different because we feel comfort in different ways. So,
absolutely. Yeah. And some of us, I think, are more naturally well suited to living out of a suitcase.
Yeah.
I don't even unpack my suitcase from place to place. Nothing leaves my suitcase.
Oh, see. Unless I'm putting it on my body. Unpack.
No, can't do it.
I had one place on this tour where there was no wardrobe, so I was like, okay, I've got to do it. And it made me sick. I was like,
really?
Why is the suitcase just full of things?
Ugh, no, I love it.
I have to unpack everything.
No, I do you know what it is like? And I was saying this last week, I have this thing about touching other people's things.
Mm.
Even if I know it's like clean and there's nothing wrong with the people, it's not a judgment thing. I don't know, I have this thing where I'm like, I don't feel settled with my stuff unpacked. It's so silly because it seems really counterintuitive.
Yeah.
But it's like when I fold things up, like all the tops are there and all the things are there, and you know, I've got my plastic bag with my dirty undies. And I've got my wash bag. That does get to leave the suitcase. That goes and lives in the bathroom. Yeah. Unless it's a shared bathroom, and then I'll take my things in and I'll bring them back. It's weird. I don't know.
It's not weird, it's just how you do it. I couldn't do that. I have to unpack my whole suitcase. Even if I don't wear the stuff that I've unpacked, they're going to be hung up, they're going to be there. I think it's a bit of a ritual as well for me, even when I leave a place, having the ritual of having to pack is it feels good. It feels like I'm putting a full stop on this leg of the journey of the tour. So, yeah.
That I can understand.
Yeah.
I think maybe I just hate packing.
Maybe.
Maybe that's what
maybe just lazy. Adele James is just lazy.
Just lazy.
T-shirt.
Yeah. I'll take that. Yeah. I'll get that tattooed on my forehead.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's interesting. It's interesting to see all the other people we're working with as well and how they tour. Like, you've got one lady who is, right, I'm going to find a nice restaurant on TripAdvisor. I'm going to find a nice place to go to brunch and then to lunch and then to dinner, maybe a snack afterwards. Mm-hmm. And I've got my digs here. The reviews are like, she knows how to tour. Do you know what I mean?
She's a professional tourer.
But then we've got one person who is like, I'm done with touring. I love the show, but I'm done.
Yeah.
Never tour again. And it's so funny how, because we've gone to some nice cities on this one. But like I said, when I did that first tour, I was like, why am I in this place? No one's black. I can't wear a hat inside a bar. I have to get out of here. Like, do you know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah, in my last tour, I went into a Tesco and this guy followed me around the shop. And I said, sir, I'm tiny. I'm very smiley. And I talk like this. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Not to stereotype myself, but I'm not the stereotype. You know what I mean? Like, if we're going to go down that road, like, anyway, I you know, sometimes I like to have fun with people. If they want to start following me around, I just do really weird circuits.
Yeah.
just waste your time a little bit while someone else is probably actually thieving.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I do enjoy that. So then, talking about like other work that you've done, Jamie, musical, Joseph, musical. Mm-hmm. What's your ratio of musical to, let's call it, straight plays?
I feel like the ratio is more musical theatre or musical-based things, because I've done like an opera in Copenhagen. I've done a couple of plays where there's been like singing involved in some shape or form. But I'd say it's more down the musical end, because, you know, she sings. But I'm really loving that I'm kind of doing more plays, because this is a play.
It's a play.
My last show was a play, Death Drop. Even though I sang in that, and there were still songs in it, it was literally one song to kind of be like, it's a drag play, so let's kind of just put some songs in there, like two or three. So yeah, it's nice to kind of venture more into the realms of plays, because I love a play.
Yeah.
I just loved going to the Nash just to watch a play, or going somewhere just to sit and go, right, just give me a good old story. Because I think sometimes with musicals, a lot of the newer stuff that has kind of come out, it's very all about how high can someone sing. And it's like, I'd rather hear someone with a really crap voice, but their acting skills are top notch and they're telling me a story, rather than hear someone belt their tits off just to show that they can, or even though it's probably written in the score or whatever, but just show that they can belt their tits off. Am I saying that I hate it? No, I don't. I love me some Wicked. I'll watch and go, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, I like acting because I like storytelling, you know, and I think for me, it's been nice just to kind of have these opportunities to go more into the realms of plays, as I said, and explore that side. Because I feel like I haven't really had the opportunity to really dive into these kind of complex characters. They've been quite, a lot of them have been quite surface characters. You've got to kind of find bits and pieces within the constructs of like four or five lines, and then you're off stage. So yeah, you do what you can, and you know, that's that. But yeah, my last couple of jobs, this one and my last show, Death Drop, did it really good to kind of go, I'm going to squeeze as much as I can out of these characters. And luckily, there's so much to work with that you can actually do that. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that makes me feel very good.
And you make a fine Lady Bracknell, if I do say so myself.
Thank you. It's also interesting the fact that I've done a lot of these jobs in drag, because obviously it's all kind of come off the back of doing Drag Race and stuff. Yeah. What I've always been interested in, even from when I was a kid, is creating characters and, you know, sketch shows and improv and stuff has always been my thing. I always feel like I never learned how to act from traditional techniques. It's always been through creating characters and improvising, all that. So I feel like I want to go back into that a bit more, because I feel like I do it like on the job. I don't really, like, you know, kind of in between we have like acting classes. I really want to do that, like just basically classes in improv again and go back into that.
Yeah,
because I love it. So yeah, it's nice to be able to combine drag and character creation and then putting it into these, like, over there, new plays or well-known plays or musicals, whatever, or just like scratch things, whatever, and kind of throwing together this new creation that isn't something that I'm known for off a TV show, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. So do you feel like you've found like your niche now, or would you like to have a balance between marrying the drag and the acting, also, I suppose, playing men?
I'm gagging to play boy. I'm gagging to play my own gender at some point.
Is there a dream role?
Oh, gosh. It's so funny, because a lot of the dream roles at the moment are all like random. Like, I'd love to do, in terms of musicals, Audrey 2 in Little Shop is like the one I've always wanted to do. It's a plant. So I'm like, okay, so that's
still
it.
A fantastic role.
Yeah, it's you know, I'd love to, again, it's another drag one, but it's Trunchbull in Matilda. Oh, yeah. I'd love to play that. Dream roles in terms of out of drag, I don't know if it's been written yet. I don't know. I mean, I'd love to do like a one-man / one-woman type show, because again, I love cabaret. I love you know, kind of those fringy kind of things, like, you know, your flea bags, like, and stuff. I love how they kind of start off very much as like a stall and a light, and an audience mm. and go from there, just script and just go from there and kind of it manifests into what it does. So that's like a dream kind of thing. I feel like that would be the dream role, is kind of creating a role for myself. Have you ever seen Whoopi Goldberg's solo shows, like back in the day before she was like, Whoopi?
No.
You should watch them. So it's basically, she just basically plays like three characters mm. in this one show. Mm. And it's just basically like, again, storytelling, monologuing. Obviously, it's comedy and stuff, but like, that would be the kind of dream thing I'd love to do, is like create like three or four characters in one show and just play them mm. and just go and then, you know, and find like a common link between them. Mm. And kind of see what happens with that, you know.
I can't wait for your Whoopi moment.
Can you imagine the Whoopi moment? I can.
I can't wait for it.
I can. But again, I think it's, this is the thing. I think the bad side, this is why I probably haven't done it yet, is because I haven't had that moment to go, just do it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think when you're an actor and you just act, that's great. Because you can just, I'm just an actor, so I'm just going to do the job, turn up, to the audition, get the job, do the script, get directed, go, and then you're done. But I think when you're an actor who also is a creative, no shade to any actors who want to be creative just by doing a script. But,
no, I know what you mean, like director, writer, producer, yes. Yeah, the creative team. Yeah,
when you're an actor who wants to also create something and write something or whatever, you have to kind of get out your own way in that mm-hmm. way and go like, just do it. And just see what happens.
That's literally it, isn't it? I've spent the last, gosh, I don't know how many months. I was working on a shadow writer scheme earlier this year. Mm. And then I had to stop because I was going away. And it was just, I just had to stop. It was becoming a bit too much. Mm. I don't think I was doing a particularly good job either. not everything is for everyone, do you know what I mean? Like, I was so grateful for the opportunity, but actually, I'm not sure it was really my style of writing. I'm not sure it was the genre I wanted to work in. Mm. And the process of it just, it wasn't really fulfilling me, I don't think. And I'm very much in a place in my life where I'm like, if I'm going to spend a lot of hours on something, it's just got, I want to get out of bed for it.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel that way. So anyway, off of the back of that, I feel like I've kind of dropped the ball on writing a little bit, because I was actually, I would say a couple of years ago, I was doing more writing than acting. But it's funny you say that, you just got to sit down and do it, because I think you and I had a conversation already about writing one man, one woman shows. Yeah. And I've just been thinking about this one woman show idea for so long. And I just sat down and I was with Phoebe Campbell, who plays Cecily in the show. We were just sat in the cafe of the Northern Stage in Newcastle. And I was like, Phoebe, I'm just going to do it. And I just opened my laptop and I was like, blah, 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 and out it came. No idea if it's any good, but you know what? It's better than looking at an empty page.
Yeah, exactly.
It's better than looking at an empty page. I don't know what came over me, but I was like, it's just time. Stop talking about it and just do it. And I sent an email to somebody because I need help with it. And so I sent an email to someone and I was like, you know what? If nothing else, even if this is a whole load of crap, what I've just splurged onto this page, at least I've made one step towards getting somebody who can help push me. To just complete the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Just one draft, that's all you need. And then, like, you can send it round to people or you can, you know, you rework it yourself. And, yeah, it's about just getting on with it, isn't it?
There's an amazing book called Big Magic.
Okay.
It's by the woman who wrote Eat, Pray, Love, Elizabeth something.
Okay.
Yeah, Julia Roberts. So she played her. Anyway.
Oh, I love Julia Roberts so much.
Love Julia Roberts, what a legend. Anyway, so Julia Roberts wrote the book. So she's written this book called Big Magic, and it's basically all about the magic of being a creative person and being creative. Mm. And she talks about this a few instances where, like, she had this idea for this book that she was like, I'm going to write this book. So she wrote this whole book treatment for a book. And life stuff happened. So then she put this book, however far she got, into a drawer, and she just left it for, like, a year, 2 years, whatever. Mm. She just forgot about it. Like, she didn't forget about it. It was always there, but she just didn't go back to
the recesses.
Yeah, but she life was happening, no family stuff, whatever. So she just kind of put this book down and she never went back to it. So then cut to like maybe 2 years later, she meets this other writer, who's quite famous, whatever. And she goes, oh, so like, this is my American now. Oh, so like, what are you working on? And she's like, oh, I've just started this idea for this book. It's about this, this is point A to point B. This is how I'm thinking it's going to work out. And she sat back and went, That's my book. She was like, how the hell has this woman stolen my book? And the whole crux of it was, and she when the book was published by this other writer, she read it, she was like, okay, it's my book, but it's not, obviously it's her version of this idea. And the whole crux of that was, is that she's saying that there are ideas that are floating around us all the time. Even now there's ideas kind of floating in the cosmos. And these ideas are looking for someone to grab them and turn it into something, okay? And this idea came to Julie Roberts and wanted Julie Roberts to write this book, or write this idea, or do this idea, or turn it into whatever it was. But because she had put it down, put it away, and had kind of like gone away from it, the idea was like, okay, I'll find someone else. So yeah, it floated out of that drawer, found someone else, and that person was able and ready and available to turn that idea into something. The two books weren't the same in the end. Like, even though it's the same idea, this book was very different to that book.
Of course.
But essentially, the idea wanted to find a home somewhere, and it found someone.
And it did.
And it did. And that's regardless if it's successful or if it fails or whatever. That's a byproduct. But it's all about having the idea just to go that. And I think what you just did there was that the reason why you were able to go laptop open and go is because you, for that moment, you were available just to start doing something with it. Even if it's just a paragraph or a full page and it's shit or it's amazing, it's irrelevant. It's that you were just available. And I think that's what it is. A lot of time when you are a creative person and you have this desire to write or create a dance routine or create some music or whatever, you just have to be available for it to come, and then you just kind of go and just do it.
Yeah.
And there's other stories in that book. It's such a great book. I mean, I've got the book and the audiobook, and it's great. I listen to it like sporadically now and again, but I've just feeling I need a bit of juice. There's another one about this woman who was a poet, and she'd be sitting on her rocking chair, just having a nice time, and she would like physically feel the poem come into her body, and she was like, if I don't write this now, it's gonna go. And she would literally write, and she describes it like she's grabbing it by the tail.
Wow.
and the idea's going, but she's bringing it back and she's gonna write it down. And sometimes she'll lose them, sometimes she'll write them down, sometimes they're success, sometimes they're not, sometimes no one cares, sometimes everyone cares. But it's that kind of thing of going, you just have to be available for ideas to kind of come to fruition. Sometimes you're not available for 20 years, 30 years. Sometimes you're available in 30 minutes. Who knows? So yeah.
That's a really interesting way of describing it, like that grabbing by the tail. Because I do think whatever that moment was that kind of overcame me, and it was over pretty quickly, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
I haven't gone back to it since, but it was only a week ago at this time. But there's something about it that's so visceral. That's it's like it's sensation. It's not something that's like outside of you, like physically speaking. And that probably sounds a bit like woo woo, but I don't know how else to describe it. August Wilson famously heard all of the voices of his characters. Like, he wouldn't write anything without talking to his characters. So,
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was like, there's a lot about how his like kind of process of writing, but one of the main things was that he heard them. And I just think that's so epic. Like, I don't hear voices, all I can hear is my own voice.
Yeah.
But certain lines will really ping out to me when I'm writing a script. But it's weird because I always hear it in my own voice. And I think that's why I really need the feedback of other people, because if you read everybody's voice in your voice, that ain't going to work.
No.
Maybe that's an actor thing, I don't know. Because naturally I slot myself into the role of whoever it is that I'm reading. So I kind of need somebody who's able to take a step back from that to be able to do that. But I just think it's so brilliant that someone could could kind of hear a bunch of people in conversation that don't exist yet.
Yeah.
That's mad.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And but he's brilliant.
And actually, even when they do exist, they're not going to sound like the way he would have heard them because you've got someone else's interpretation of this person on the page.
Yeah.
So, and then you've got the director's interpretation of the whole thing, of the whole world. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's interesting. That is, I've never heard of that. So that's, but again, big magic. If that's what you hear and these are the people speaking to you, that's your big magic.
I think it's about understanding what yours is, isn't it? How does that creativity speak to me or manifest so that I can then take advantage of it? So if I know it's happening, which I think I have become more attuned to over the years, whereas before I was just like, there's a lot of chaos in my head, sort of swirling going on.
You know, it's one of those things where it comes easier to some people,
mm-hmm.
and it comes, I don't say harder for other people, but it just comes a bit more, it's a bit more of a journey to be able to grasp it and go, oh, okay, this is for me to do something with. Okay, that's awesome. You know, Mariah Carey, I'm a huge Mariah Carey fan. And she always says, you know, it is like, it's like a gift from God for her to be able to hear melodies. Like,
she's extraordinary.
She could be, you know, doing the washing up, but do you know what I mean? She could be doing something very mundane. She'll hear a melody in her head, and that's her... that's a way of going, oh, okay, this is new, let's do that. And obviously, you know, I imagine that she's very, she's quite skilled at it now to be able to listen and accept it and go, right, let's put that down.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can't imagine, you know, it would have been easy to kind of understand.
No, it takes time.
Yeah.
It takes time. But I suppose what I'm getting at is not blocking it when it comes up.
Yeah, and so
trying not to.
Oh my God, I think blocking is such a great word for that, actually, because it's. I think if you're blocked somewhere in your life, that's going to block things.
The creativity.
Yeah. So you almost have to work on whatever shit you've got going on to be able to then go, right, I'm now open to receive all these amazing things that I can turn into something, potentially.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know? And that's why I really like having these conversations with other actors, with friends, about not just like the work itself, but like the human being that has to do the work, because there's always going to be that balance. All the work I do with my clients is about like, who are you? What do you have to offer as a person? It completely independently of your artistic skill and interest. And how does that marry up with what you want from your career? Because you're a person who does this for a living, not the other way, you know what I mean? It's like, if you're not okay in yourself, if I'm so tired that I have nothing to give for the show, what's the point of me being cast in the show?
It's interesting as well, because it's almost like we're in a very social, like a socially led career, essentially. Like it's very collaborative with your other actors, the director, the MD, the costume, whoever, like you're collaborating. But when you're creating, it's actually quite a lonely thing, actually.
Yeah, very solitary.
You know, I've got a couple of friends who have unfortunately taken their life. Talent, just like absolute talent. But you'd be surprised how lonely they felt, you know, trying to hone this talent. And it's like, it's a very strange subject to kind of dive into, and I think you can't just dive into it for 5 minutes. The whole thing kind of unpack and kind of go that. But yeah, it's interesting how we're in a very, as I said, a very socially led, collaborative industry in that respect. But when you're the person trying to create something, it's just your brain and you
and those thoughts.
And I know, and
yeah,
and it's fabulous, and it's also at the same time quite.
Yeah. I discovered a couple of years ago a community that I honestly haven't actually taken advantage of nearly as much as I should have. I'm so sorry, ladies. But it's a group of South London creatives. They're all women, as far as I know, still all women. And they just get together on Zoom. They used to be in person, but since the pandemic, it's still on Zoom. And they just talk about what's going on for them, kind of like we are now, what's going on for them, what their goals are for the next month or for the year at the beginning of every year. They all bring something to share. So like, I saw this, or I watched such and such, or I saw this amazing opportunity that other people might, you know, benefit from. And they just like catch up.
That's amazing.
And because they are all creatives on the other side, so none of them well, actually, I think one of them's a writer-actor, but pretty much all of them are just writers, right. Or just directors. It's just an opportunity for them to have a community, which I don't feel like other people in our industry get to have. In the same way that we do as actors.
Yeah.
I think we're probably more fortunate in that respect, because even on a show, it's like there's a bit of an us and them thing that goes on. Mm-hmm. Even though we all get on really well with our stage management team. Like, I mean, bless Cassie. There are venues. Cassie is our deputy stage manager. So Cassie's the one that does all the calls during our show for lighting and sound and anything technical, basically. And there have been shows where, where Cassie has been up in a box at the back of the auditorium, so behind all of the audience, three floors up. I mean, it's miles away.
Yeah.
And she's got to sit there on her own throughout tech, throughout the shows, throughout warm-up, throughout... I mean, it's... I can't think of anything more lonely. And she does it with a smile on her face, and she's gorgeous, and she's such a lovely person. And I feel like she's a real part of the company. But there must be times when... I can't speak for her, but I would imagine there must be times when she's like, oh, like looking at us all playing Keepy Uppy or whatever, and she's like, oh.
I think luckily with those kind of things, it's only a few hours in
the day,
which is great. But you can imagine if that's something that you just do. Like, imagine this is like we are in one theatre for a year, just so.
Yeah, 18 months. Yeah, like Harry Potter or something like that.
Like, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot to do. But hey, you know, I think, we're very lucky with who we're working with.
Mm-hmm.
It's just great people.
And there are communities out there for people who are interested in things that are other than acting. There are obviously loads of acting communities, but... There are lots of communities where other creatives can kind of connect with other creatives.
And I do kind of feel like, again, I need to get more on this, actually, is that kind of, it's the things you do in between the jobs. Because obviously when you're in a job, it's amazing, you know, you work with people, you're touring, or you might be in town or whatever, and you're just kind of in the bubble of the job.
Yeah.
But when you're not in the job, you know, people go off and do their own thing, people are busy, and, you know, and you don't see those people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you only really keep in touch fully, maybe one person if you're lucky, you know.
Because
sometimes I've done jobs where I have a great time with all these people, but once the job's done, we all kind of go off on our own journeys and carry on life. So it is that kind of thing that you do in between, whether that's classes, whether that's a Zoom call with a bunch of other creatives to have a chat, to, you know, do ideas, whether it's a writing group or a director group or whatever, like dance class, whatever. It's the things you do in between which I think really help keep you juicy and mentally juicy and creatively juicy. Do you get what I mean? So I think that that's something I need to do for sure, because I know that I'm like, I know I should do it, but I don't do it as much as I probably should do. So,
class definitely for me has been a massive saving grace over the years. I've trained at the same place for like 4 years and I just love it. I think it's just kept me
juicy.
Like, very juicy. I am particularly juicy.
That orange jumper today, she's like a Clementine today. She's like a Satsuma.
We'll go Satsuma. Okay, Daniel, my darling.
Yes.
Before I let you frolic off into the Liverpool winds, it's so windy here. I do this thing with my guests where I ask them to provide a request for the next guest, so they don't know who they're asking for. The last guest I had was Sam Benjamin, who my lovely friend who just moved to LA about a year ago now.
Hello Sam.
And his question for you, he wanted to ask, when was a moment that you can recall that midway through a scene you kind of realised that you were just so in the zone with the other actor you were working with, or the other actors, plural, and or when was a moment where midway through working on something, any kind of project, you were like, this is what I got into this job for, like, this is what I got into this business for?
I feel like I've had a couple of moments where I'm doing a scene or doing like a group number of sorts, and I kind of go, oh my god, this is why I decided to do this kind of thing, this madness. I think definitely when I was in Everybody's Talking About Jamie, there was this, the song actually got cut in the end, but but there was this amazing song that we had in the finale, and it was too long for sure, so yeah, good cut it. But I remember this might have been the first must have been in previews when I had this moment, but I think it was the realisation of going, not only am I doing the West End finally, because it's the first like, West End gig, but it was just so joyous just to see everyone kind of singing, and we're all doing this dance routine, which was insane. But I did have this moment, I just went, oh my God, this is like everything I've thought about doing and wanted to be doing ever since I was like very little. And finally I'm doing it. And it's kind of you kind of go, wow, how did we get here? Like, how did this all just kind of fall into place for me? You know, a working class boy from North London, you know, it's, I just felt very kind of humbled and very kind of privileged to be able to do this, especially that particular show, because just because of what the story is and what it means to people on an emotional level. It's just so nice to be part of that. I also did an opera in Copenhagen, like I said before, and that was great because that really honed in on my kind of improv skills that I like to jump on. And there was a moment where I've got this massive speech that we'll do. We kind of wrote in the room together and kind of like, you know, tweaked or whatever. And I'm doing this speech, and it wasn't necessarily a connection with the other actors because they were behind me kind of frozen. You know, all these gorgeous like opera singers giving it all that, being very dramatic and very diva-ish. But I'm doing this massive speech to this, you know, Danish audience. And I'm just sitting, and opera houses, I don't know if you've been to an opera house before, but like, they're like, imagine taking like a theater and times it by 10. They're insane. 5 tiers. You're like, what the hell?
It's luxury.
Yeah. And it's a full house. Like, there's not one empty seat. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing this speech and I'm like, you know, and it's all very kind of, you know, mental and crazy. I'm doing these weird voices and these weird things. And I'm like, you know, I'm pointing at people and that kind of stuff, being very kind of cabaret about it. And then at the end of it, I just get this massive applause. I think a lot of people stood up as well. And I'm like, okay, bye. And I go off. And you know, you're like, I've just done this much speech to a bunch of Danish people. And they give me a standing ovation. And it's just like the first speech of the show. Like, we're not even halfway through the show. Yeah. And you know, you go to yourself, I have to breathe for a second here because this is bigger. This is too big for me. Like, it feels bigger than what I could have expected me to do. So yeah, that felt like a very nice moment of going, oh, I am out of my body right now because you're clapping for a few words that I've made up in a room and which kind of make no sense really. But whatever I'm doing, you're connecting with it. And tick, job well done. Mm. But also, you know, it does give you a little bit of an ego boost in that thing. Because you just want to do a good job. Do you know what I mean? Again, it's not about being unfamous. It's not about that. It's just about people connecting with what you're saying. Because a lot of the time, in real life, people don't connect with you. And people don't listen to you. Mm-hmm. And I've had many experiences growing up where I'll be speaking and you can literally see people go and just turn their head and you're like, how am I meant to be in the room? How can I take up some space in where I am? So yeah, it was very validating in that respect. Stunning. So yeah.
I got goosies.
Oh.
I got goosies when you said that. It is overwhelming. We've had a couple of standing O's, if I may say so. Ooh, yes. For the importance of being honest. And I always tear up. Yeah. I always tear up to feel like someone. And it's a small effort to stand up from your seat, yeah, but especially to be the first one to do it. Like, I just think that's so brave because those people are largely non-actors. And, like, don't get me wrong, yeah, when I'm in the audience, I'm, like, giving it church clap. Like, I'm jumping up and down. Yeah. I'm yelling. But I think that just kind of comes with the personality.
Especially Britain as well, because if you go to, say, like, a Broadway show, they're standing up before they've even
before it's
breathed.
Finished.
Do you know what I mean? They're like, yeah, great. And it's like, and it's almost like, that's just what you do in New York. You just stand up and give them a round of applause. But again, I think when you're in the UK, and especially when you're going to places with a show like ours, you know, it's interesting when you kind of get people standing up. And you kind of go, that's really nice. And it's, again, it's a bit of an ego boost. And it makes you go, okay, we're all collectively doing a good
doing all right.
Yeah.
And do you then have anything you want to request for the next guest? So it can be a question as well, or you can ask them to explain something for other actors or whoever. Anything you want to throw out for the next guest? Maybe asking them for an anecdote, like what Liv did in the first episode.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you could write a one-person show and star in it, what would it be about and why?
Ooh.
Is that good?
Yes, I love that. Yes, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Because I think naturally people go to their own life story, but I wonder if we'll get someone who doesn't.
Yeah.
No, I really like that. I really like that. I really like that. Thank you.
Okay, cool.
Thank you. And then my last thing is to share your self-care intention. So we've already discussed mine, I think. I'm going to call my mummy.
Call your mum.
I'm going to call my mummy. What's your self-care intention for the foreseeable future?
Oh, my God. Mentally, I think just keep on believing, working on the belief side of things. Because sometimes, yeah, sure, we're working, we have a nice time. But I know for me, sometimes I go a bit like, yeah, but should I be doing something else? You know, and sometimes I still think that. So I'm like, oh, maybe I should. This is nice, but maybe we should do something else. Who knows? Just working on the belief side of yourself and knowing what you want. You know, I think, you know, we've done enough jobs now to warrant saying no to things and saying yes to things you want to do. Because yes is a very expensive commodity.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? When you say yes to something, you give a lot to it. So, yeah, so self-belief on that side. Physically, oh, I should probably go to the gym a bit more, shouldn't I? I can't bother.
You and me both.
I can't bother. Walk a bit more. Walk and look up a bit more.
Oh, yes, look up.
And you know, look around. Be curious. Be inquisitive about things. I think that would be my self-care for myself.
Stunning. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for having some London Nootropics coffee with me.
London Nootropics. I'm hooked.
I'm glad to hear it. You can get 15% off if you like with code Adele J.
Adele J.
That's right. 15% off.
Hello.
But I'll shoot you some more, for example.
Thank you, my love. Fill me right up.
No, but honestly, thank you so much, Daniel. You know, I love you to pieces and it's
love
gorgeous
you.
To chat. And I do hope that there's been something in this that will help other people.
Wow. Thank you for listening. You can follow me across all social media platforms. My Instagram is The Only Vinegar Strokes. Twitter, The Only Vinegar. And if you're a handsome gentleman, Grindr.
And there it is. What a sign off. Stunning. Thank you. Love you. Mwah.
Mwah.